front of the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E!
Dave?
Right, man, Dave.
Dave's not here!
Hey everyone, it's Dave. Welcome to another edition of Just What Do You Think You're Doing, Dave? A podcast that's really about my thoughts, my thinkings, my beliefs, some of maybe things in technology, maybe in science, maybe in politics, maybe in a little social activism. But things that are of interest to me. There's a lot to talk about and a lot of things I like to bring to attention. And I figured I'm going to continue this podcast or maybe restart it and kind of go down that path and think about some of the things that are relevant to me. So I hope you'll bear with me and I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to start or restart by talking about the Supreme Court. Back in about 2014, Chief Justice Roberts was talking about the legacy of the court and how important he thought it was that the court be viewed favorably and that they were making good arguments and there was no infighting and there was a lot of interesting things happening. And he was very keen on that. It was a really interesting sort of thought in context with today and where we are and kind of where things are going. You know, you can think about the fact that you had Justice Scalia who died while he was on the court, and it was during Obama's last year in office, and you could make the case the GOP fought hard to steal that seat and make sure that it stayed in a conservative person's hand. And that's where Gorsuch got placed into the office. And, you know, that is what it is. It's unfortunate, but on the other side, the Democrats didn't really fight to try to keep that seat. I mean, they did sort of, but the GOP fought harder and won. And then you had, I believe it was Kennedy who stepped down during the term, and he was replaced by Brett Kavanaugh. Now, Brett, you know, there was a lot of concerns about him, and there are still a lot of concerns about him and his some of the things he's done outside of the court, and maybe not really being, you know, the upstanding citizen that you'd want on the court. But be that as it may, he got confirmed. And again, you had the GOP fighting hard for something they wanted, and the Democrats weren't fighting as hard. And then, unfortunately, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Ruth was a champion of social justice and the rights of people. And Ruth dies, and, you know, the same argument that the GOP used against the Democrats when Scalia died, now we're being used in a different way, you know, kind of 180 degrees around and saying, well, we have to replace the person, you know, while the president is still serving his term and blah, blah, blah. And wound up getting Barrett, as the next justice. And she obviously had some concerns about her as well, her conservatism and her activism. And there was a lot of discussion from the GOP that you don't want judicial activism. You don't want people on the court who are going to, you know, use their own personal beliefs to guide the court. And all three of these people had already shared that was sort of what they wanted to do. They wanted to use their space, their own influence in their lives, whether it was their faith or their beliefs or their political activism, to shape the court. And it was clear through their confirmation hearings that was going to be the case. So you can't expect any different. Now, it did happen that you had another justice retire more recently, and Jackson Brown was appointed as the next Supreme Court justice, and she's got, you know, she's a little more liberal in her viewpoints and so forth, and she's the first Black woman to serve on the court. So you've got an interesting mix now of people that are there. But the problem is the court is more heavily leaning more conservative, a lot more conservative. So that's a potential shortcoming. Now, on the one hand, the court, regardless of who serves there, has always seemed to side on the side of the Constitution. When it's a constitutional matter and it's brought properly, they'll tend to rule in favor of the Constitution. So some of these things that are happening with voting rights and so forth, and some of these things that are happening with some of the maps and some of the other things that are very specifically related to the Constitution, they'll tend to vote in that favor. And that's sort of the hallmark of the Supreme Court, and that's still the case. So you see a lot of cases that come down that go that way. But when it comes to laws, when it comes to things that are brought to their attention or maybe even not brought to their attention, they will use their political viewpoint to shape what the outcomes are. And it's interesting to see how that happens. And it kind of started last year when we had the discussion about Roe v. Wade and abortion access. And the fact that during all of the confirmation hearings, each of the justices said they would, you know, they would weigh it carefully and they would think about it if a case was brought. And Roberts had said, Chief Justice Roberts had said he wasn't worried about it because there were no cases before the court. There was no reason to be concerned about Roe v. Wade. It was, you know, it's a long-standing tradition. It's, you know, it's been there for so long. You know, there's no reason to consider that it's going to be overturned in some way. And of course, one of the first things that happens, the Supreme Court sets its crosshairs directly on that. There was no case brought before it. They just went back and reviewed something that had previously been decided and was a long-standing principle and decided to overturn it based on political viewpoints. And it's just, it's kind of sad and ridiculous when you think about it. And you realize that the court is very politically motivated in that sense. Look, I'll grant you, abortion is not anywhere in the Constitution. So from a standpoint, a point of view, you could make the case that they could rule on it. But because it was an already standing thing, it was a problem, right, to bring that up. And Chief Justice Roberts has a problem now, too, that the legacy of his court, the one he wanted to fight so hard to keep, the one he wanted to make sure represented him well, he's lost control of his court to a large degree. The fact that they brought up something, voted on it, and overturned something that was a long-standing principle he said would never happen is kind of troubling. And then over the course of the last year or so, you hear about different things that are happening, like Clarence Thomas. I don't even know how this guy got confirmed in the first place. He has so many question marks around him. And there was a period of time for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years, where he asked not a single question during oral arguments before the Supreme Court, which is just strange. He didn't talk. He didn't give anybody any insights in what he was doing, but always ruled on a very conservative basis. So it was just really strange. And then you find out his wife is politically connected. She's involved with campaigning, politicking, doing all these things that are so anti-democracy in terms of having a Supreme Court justice's wife being heavily involved in basically helping shape the country. It's just amazingly ridiculous. And then she was involved in the January 6th insurrection too, directly. And you go, how can this be? How can we have this happening on the Supreme Court? And then you look at what he did on the court, and you realize that he's always voting in a way that is very conservative and very influential that way. And then it turns out that he's been improperly taking gifts and trips and things from at least one big political donor who has argued a case before him before, who was named in a case at some point. And you say, how does that happen that you have this guy who's out there and he has the influence over a Supreme Court justice? And again, Thomas never recused himself from any of those cases. He never recused himself from anything his wife was involved in. It's just, you know, it's really sad that the legacy here is that we have a justice who's writing right against the rules of ethics. And you go, how can that be? And then you have Justice Alito, who's been taking also extravagant gifts from people and taking trips and doing things that would cost a lot of money had he paid for it himself. And the person he took them from has appeared before the Supreme Court, I think they said 10 times, and he never recused himself. How is that fair? How is that the way we should be running our country? How is that the right thing to do? And you had Jackson Brown came in and she said, wow, I didn't even take bagels from someone because I thought it would be viewed as undue influence. I want to make sure that I'm properly conducting myself. And so things kind of go in a way and you go, what the heck is going on there? And so the Supreme Court needs to be reshaped. It needs to be rethought. It needs to be, something needs to happen. You know, if there were term limits or the ability to easily vote people out, given that they have ethics concerns, improper things, they can, but it's very complicated. So we're at a point where there's some weird things happening. So yeah, the Supreme Court ruled favorably on some things that were very constitutional. But then you look at the other things they did this term. You had the case of doing away with affirmative action at universities. Now, I will tell you that in my own experience, sometimes these things like affirmative action, like I'll even use the social justice item of kneeling before games and doing all these different things like that, those things serve a purpose for a period of time to get attention and move the needle on things. But when you let them go on too long and you let them kind of sit there and keep doing the same thing, they lose their purpose. They lose their focus. So in the case of the affirmative action, you realize that the court changed the way that works. And already universities were kind of working right up against that rule and using the rule to their advantage, disadvantage, whatever it would be, to make it work for them. So by doing away with it, they're forcing the universities and companies by extension to rethink their strategy on it. Is it the right thing to do? Of course not. There probably should have been a thought about what would happen after, rather than just going, okay, we're doing away with this. Same thing that happened a few years ago when they did away with the some of the civil rights acts, the Jim Crow laws and all those things that happened, you know, making sure that people had the right to vote in the South. Same principle. Without a plan in place, you know, oh, it's just time. That's not the suitable answer. So I find it interesting, and there's a lot of things you can think about with this. And there's probably goods and bads that go along with overturning affirmative action at universities. Mostly bads, I would assume. But there's got to be some goods that come of this. You know, someone's got to come up with a better way. Someone's got to think about how do we help people who may be underprivileged in some way and can't get into universities. Affirmative action may not be the right answer today. But what is the right answer for tomorrow? And that's where we need to be thinking about it, rather than focused on, oh, this is really bad that they took it away. That's just my opinion about it. And of course, there's a lot of opportunities out there. You can do a lot of different things, and you can see how the government could respond to this if they want to. But how interested are people in getting involved in, you know, this quagmire, the politics of it? When Black Lives Matter was happening, it divided everyone, right? People had a very strong opinion one way or the other. And it just makes no sense. It's very strange. I don't understand why people got so defensive about it. But anyway, that's beside the point. The other thing was this ruling about the baker in Colorado who didn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding and said they had a constitutional right based on their beliefs that they didn't have to work with this couple. Okay, first off, you know, there's always an easy out for people. You know, I can't make this because of, and you can use a legitimate reason. I don't have time. I can't do it in that time, the time you need, whatever. And then on the other side, these people are paying you money to do a service. So you're putting two men or two women or whatever at the top of the cake. Who cares? Does it really matter? How does that personally offend you? They're offering you money to do work and you're saying no? Well, okay. I mean, you can always do that. That's always your right and your option. You could say no when people want to offer you money. But it's just surprising to me if you're trying to run a business, you're gonna say, no, I can't. But this is what this country has become to a large degree, is people having these weird opinions and trying to promote their own opinions based on things that they hear or see or whatever. But then the case gets even weirder. You know, the fact that it went before the Supreme Court is kind of strange. And the fact that the Supreme Court agreed to hear it and rule on it is even stranger. And then one step even stranger is the fact that this actually never happened. This baker made up the entire thing about someone coming and asking them to make a cake for a gay wedding. It was entirely fictitious. They used names of people who had never even contacted the bakery about making a cake, and then said that they had refused them, and then they had, you know, there was some contention between them. They didn't want to have to make it, and blah blah blah, and they filed suit, and that's how it wound up before the Supreme Court. But it was all based on a lie. And here's the bigger problem we have. That now lies become truth if they're said often enough. This is an issue we have, and we need to make sure we're being very cautious and careful about this. And as a result of that case, several of the more liberal justices, if you will, came out and said things like, this is a big problem, we have a huge hole here, we need to make sure this isn't happening, and I can't believe that the conservative justices ruled this way. And then Chief Justice Roberts got mad at them for actually saying something and, you know, undermining the legitimacy of the court or whatever. I'm sorry. If the whole case was brought to you, if the whole case that was brought to you was a lie or based on a lie, and you ruled on it, and you ruled, well, oddly and incorrectly probably, then something weird is going on. And it's a bigger problem other than the couple of people complaining that the rest of the court is being very biased. And that's where the bigger challenge is. And again, I think the court needs to change in some way. There needs to be some changes made to the court, whether it's expanded, whether justices are asked to leave, whatever it is. There is a process for impeachment. There is also a process for expanding the court. So, you know, it's one of those things you have to think about. How do you manage it? What do you do? I mean, you want it to be fair. And I'm not saying that it's not fair necessarily, because these were people who were appointed, these are people who were confirmed. But when you look at the confirmation numbers, you realize that it was very biased in that sense. You know, who voted for it, who didn't, right? It was very narrow, and it was always, you know, one vote away or a couple votes away. And you look at the questions they were asked, and I remember hearing some of the senators talking about, you know, they had grave concerns about, I believe it was Kavanaugh was the one they were the most concerned about. They had grave concerns about him, but, you know, he seems to have passed all the tests, and he's fine, and I'll vote for him anyway. Okay, what does that mean? So that's kind of where we are. And the other thing to think about when you think about this case about religious discrimination and the ability to discriminate based on your religion, I'm going to throw out there that I am starting a religion of Dave. The religion of Dave is based on the principle of sanity, rationality, and telling the truth, and based on scientific principle, and basically being a good person. And if you're a jerk, if you appear to be stupid to me, then I am going to say that for my religious reasons, I am not going to serve you. I'm not going to help you in any way. I'm not going to do anything for you because that's against my religion. It's an affront to it. And that's the problem with these things, right? As soon as it happens once, it can happen again and again and again. I'm being silly and saying something like that. But remember that this could happen again and again. This is where we are. This is what's going to happen next. The next religion is going to come up, I can't do this. And the next religion is going to come up, I can't do that. And you start to bleed into that separation of church and state again. That people have the right to discriminate against people for no particular reason, other than they feel like it. Where does it stop? So anyway, that's my podcast for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. And remember, if we can dream it, we can certainly do it. Bye now.
What's your point, David?